You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 100.5 FM.
Strange Songs of Trust and Treachery is a new exhibition at the Grant Gallery. The show is part of an extended project by Laura Lamb, spanning more than a decade, in which she continually builds a fictive world around a set of characters and props she calls Lamb's performing objects. Laura also has a long history with the Red Eye Collective and has been doing unique and insightful arts reviews for our show since the 1980s. And Laura joins me now to talk about her show. Good morning, Laura.
Hi, Lorraine. Nice to be here.
It's super nice to see you here. Let me first say that I was absolutely delighted by the show and also by the evolution of Lamb's performing objects.
Thanks.
Walk us through the Grant and tell us what we would find there.
Well, before you get into the gallery, I have a text on the windows, and this text is repeated in my drawings and in the poster that you might have seen. So the text is really important, and that's on the windows. Then you come in, and on your right you see two sets of drawings. And the drawings are are depictions of the characters, and you see other depictions of them on the other side, 3D ones. So there's a pile of suitcases, and on the top suitcase there's this collection of performing objects, which I call the players, or the century players. And they look like hand puppets. They're the short-armed tribe. They're just like us. They're exactly like us. They do everything that we do, but they only have short arms. And some of them have kind of taken on a life of their own. So one of them is Blackie Schwarzkopf, who's the impresario of the whole enterprise, and another one is Lotta Obratsov, who is the chanteuse, who is the character who sings the songs, which are also part of the work. Then next to that, there's some moving performing objects on strings, and they are representatives of a larger group of objects, which I call the Great Menagerie, or also I call it What Other Beasts. And then beyond that is another set of moving objects, which is called the Department of Ornithology, which is both of these sets of moving objects are moved by motors. And these ones are moved from below by wires or rods. So they're sort of like rod puppets, and they're made out of paper napkins. And they represent birds. And then there's a shadow. They make a shadow show on the wall. And then in the next room, there's my video, which is Bits and Tatters, which is the first of a trilogy of videos, which is the Strange Songs of Trust and Treachery, and so on.
The Department of Ornithology in particular, that's a new work I haven't seen before. And I just found it so evocative, just beautiful. The movements of these bird-like creatures are so wonderful in the shadows. It's absolutely entrancing. Where did the idea for that work come from?
Well, it's partly all of my different performing objects are, and the figures themselves are inspired by different kinds of puppet theater from different parts of the world. So these ones, I have another name for them, which is called Snotto Wayang, because they look like they're used Kleenexes, but they Wayang is an Indonesian word for puppets, so I was inspired by Indonesian puppets, rod puppets for those.
Yeah. When I was in the gallery, I was quite quite entranced and taken by this world that you've created, which you describe as a fictive world. But when taking in that world, I feel slightly sort of off balance and unsure of the meanings. I have my own meanings that I'm created, but I feel like, are these the ones that Laura intended? Is where do you kind of stand with the amount of meaning that you put into something and what viewers are taking away?
Oh, well, I mean, I very much want to allow the viewers to create their own meaning. That's one of my most important projects, actually. That's really an aim of my work, is just trying to nudge the viewers into creating their own stories. And I hope to share my my take on the world. I hope that they absorb something about, you know, how I feel and how I understand things. But very much wanting to have the viewers involved in creating the meaning. That's almost, you know, primary.
And the world that you're creating is not one that is seamless, then, in terms of its meanings.
It's not seamless at all. It has all kinds of gaps. It's really more gap than it is thing. It's really like more negative space than positive in the terms of drawing. You know, it's mostly not there, and that gives the viewer more work to do. I'm really interested in how, like, for instance, in the way the figures that move, the way they move, that they don't move very much, that they don't do a lot, that they just kind of nudge the viewer's imagination into making them alive. So the bringing them alive, the vivification, is something that is done between me and the viewer. It's not something that I do.
We've talked a bit about puppets and the puppets in the show, and that's one of the sort of key motifs or themes in the show, but also the circus is there. So why is the circus such an important and enduring part of this long project that you've had?
Well, circus is so incredibly rich, you know. Well, for one thing, because it's a circus, it can contain anything. You know, anything that I do, I work in a lot of different media, so I'm able to contain, to put anything I want into this and say, this is just another act in the circus. The acts, the kind of, that are within this kind of half indicated fictive world, the circus acts, some of them might not be typical circus acts, like for instance, I think like some of the circus acts are poets. You know, there's not that many poets in most circuses, but circus is it brings me into connection with early modernist work, where circus was a really important theme. And I kind of relate to the ways a lot of modernist artists thought of the circus as circus performers, as not being all glitz and glamour, but actually being kind of creatures who are full of pathos and who kind of represent us in our quest, our kind of almost hopeless quest to bring meaning into the world and to live authentically, to wander through the world and to create.
There's a new work in the show called Bits and Tatters, which is a video for which you collaborated with the singer and composer Beverly Dobrynsky, who some people know as she's the artistic director and the founder of the Slavic music group Zelia here in Vancouver, and she's an old friend of yours. Let's listen to a bit of the soundtrack from the film that with Beverly.
Great.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and Beverly is playing the hurdy-gurdy there, which is an incredible instrument.
The song is based on, the song that we hear the beginning of there is based on some words by Fred Douglas, is a BC artist that you studied with at UVic, and I know he was a very close friend of yours until his death in 2005. How does the meanings in Fred's text help shape the film and also inform your work more generally?
Well, the text of that song, the text was just a piece of prose, And then I worked it into this series of songs. So all I did was rearrange the words a little bit and make them rhyme. And then Beverly changed them a bit more to make them work more, even better as a song. The text is really about how to make work in this, using a kind of a method of collage, but taking that idea of collage, which is non-hierarchical, which takes many different parts and puts them together and forms a whole in which each part informs other parts and changes the whole thing, changes each part as they all reflect on each other. But even more than that, his idea was that that you can do this in a way which is very modest, which steps back from the, which completely rejects the idea of the artist as a heroic creator of meaning, and gives the artist a much more collaborative role with the objects or the subject matter or whatever it is that the artist starts out with. So the idea that just by interacting with that subject matter or objects or whatever in a wholehearted way, in opening yourself up to it, embracing it, and then allowing it to collapse and crumble into pieces and bits, and then letting those pieces and bits carry you as the artist and at the same time the viewer along to more meaning. So the song is an example of that. The work is an example of that, while at the same time being about it, talking about it.
Hmm. Although nothing in the work is overtly political, I felt as if I'd been affected by a certain ethic that was permeating this kind of celebration of humble, what we describe them as, like, you know, napkins. They look like, you know, they look like something you might blow your nose with, yet they become extraordinary. And I interpret that or experience that as a kind of anti-consumerist kind of ethic, or at least that was like part of the meaning that was shaping for me. And I wonder if that meaning is something that you intended.
That might be. I mean, I certainly very much consider myself of that point of view. I didn't really think about it too much. There's a stream of art work that tries to do that. That tries to be to use the poorest materials, art povera, you know, using poor materials, using junk and garbage, and having the thing have no value as a luxury object. I think that's part of my ethic, as well as just the idea of how we carry on in how to carry on in a creative and meaningful and authentic way in a world which, to me, is in a state of continual post-trauma syndrome. You know, how to survive. That I think that's the strongest ethic in the work.
Something to see, something to talk about, something to think of. What's that text all about?
A lot of the texts, I was inspired by circus posters from kind of the golden age of circus, from around the turn of the 18th to the 9th, I mean the 19th to the 20th century, about the 20 years on either side of that. I was looking at circus posters, and a lot of them from that time are almost all text. They have very limited imagery, and the text is really over the top. It's really grandiose. It's really unabashed in its self-promotion. Some of it is almost like ranting, abbreviating rants. It goes on and on. They use the biggest words they can think of. Never use a one-syllable word if they can find a four-syllable word. I think people who saw those circus posters, some of them probably went home to their dictionary to figure out what they were saying. So I thought, yeah, that's I want to do that. I want to use those. You know, why not? You know, let's go all out. Let's say what let's be as exuberant and tell the world what we really think and use invective and use grandiose statements. You know, it's sort of the opposite of that modesty that I was talking about before. It's like it. Maybe my method of working is modest, but now that I'm putting it out there, I'm not going to be modest. But that particular one, I just stole directly. I didn't. Some of my slogans are inspired by these slogans, and some of the slogans that I found were just so good I couldn't change them. So that one, you know, something to see, something to talk about, and something to think of. I just thought, yes. That's what I want my, you know, I want people to, that's how I want people to approach my work. And that's how the circus wanted people to, you know, like, you can imagine these, if, you know, people who were isolated on farms who had hardly any entertainment and they go to the circus so that they'll have something to see, something to talk about, and something to think of. I mean, it's a very different situation than what we have now where we're bombarded by all kinds of entertainment. But still, I still want to make that statement.
It's a wonderful show, and I've really enjoyed our conversation this morning. And we're going to go out on a circus piece. Can you just introduce what Beverly's going to sing now?
Oh, yeah. So Beverly is singing with all her these songs, the three songs, which are going to be the basis of two more videos. She's singing them in the character of Lotta Obratsov. And this is Circus Waltz, which is, it's the second of the third of the three songs. And it just kind of directly addresses my feelings about the circus.
I've been speaking with Laura Lamb, whose exhibition Strain Songs of Trust and Treachery is showing at the Grunt Gallery until May 4th. You can find out more at grunt.ca or at lauralamb.ca. Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you.
And now let's listen to Circus Waltz.
The sky and the dust, the sky. The tigers will tease us, their antics will please us, the circus is coming today. The devil will dream us, his friends will redeem us, the circus is coming, hooray. And when the travelers have gone, as they must, all that is left is the sky and the dust, the sky. The clowns will amaze us, we won't let it faze us, the circus is leaving, they say. The beasts will connect us, they'll never reject us, the circus has gone on its way. And after the music from the trumpet and fiddle, and after rhyming of end and of middle, after the stories and pictures and songs, and after pranks, provocations and wrongs, and after the travelers have gone as they must, all that is left is the sky and the dust, the sky.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@cooperadio.org.